This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. Fellas, you've heard the phrase, look good, feel good, right? But why not add smell good to that too? That's where Sterling Soap Company comes in. First, Sterling Soap is 100% natural and has a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne. Second, there's a scent just for you. How about burgundy? Yeah, it's more than a color. The Sterling Soap folks blend natural essential oils with hints of mahogany, golden amber, and sandalwood. Or how about D503, an intensely masculine scent inspired by Legend by Mont Blanc. And third, you will feel good about the price. For just a little more than you'd pay at the grocery store, Sterling Soap will leave you feeling clean, refreshed, and ready for whatever's next. Give Sterling Soap a try today. Visit sterlingsoap.com. This day in sports history. It's March 22nd, and on this day in 1969, a tragic accident cut short an amazing runner's career. Abebe Bikila is probably not a name you've heard too often or at all, but what he accomplished in his short running career and then what that inspired has had a dramatic effect on distance running for decades and is still evident today. Before we get to what happened on this day, I want to talk about his amazing accomplishments first. Bikila grew up in Ethiopia and had been a shepherd before becoming a bodyguard to Ethiopia's emperor, Haile Selassie. It wasn't until he was 24 that he became interested in running when he saw a marathon on television. And he quickly realized that he had a talent for running long distances, and he soon caught the eye of the coach of Ethiopia's distance running team. After joining the team, Bikila trained hard, but in the lead-up to the 1960 Olympic Games in Rome, he was left off the marathon team and was only added as a replacement when another runner broke his foot. The only problem now is he didn't have any shoes. His were worn out. He was given a new pair, but in warm-up runs, they rubbed blisters, so he made the decision to run without shoes for the Olympic marathon. Running a course that included the cobbled Appian Way, Bikila split from the pack with one other runner, and then he powered away from him with 500 meters to go in the race to win in a record time of 2 hours, 15 minutes, 16.2 seconds, shattering the Olympic marathon record by nearly 8 minutes and the world record by 8-tenths of a second. It was also the first time an East African had won an Olympic gold medal. After the race, Bikila spoke about his decision to run barefoot this way. "I wanted the world to know that my country, Ethiopia, always won with determination and heroism." 4 years later in Tokyo, Bikila won the marathon again, this time wearing shoes, to become the first person to repeat as an Olympic marathon champion. His win in Rome made him a national hero, and repeating only made his stature grow more. He was the inspiration behind the distance running boom in Ethiopia and Kenya, and of course, that influence continues to this day. Just take a look at the top 10 men's and women's marathon times, and you will see that 18 of the 20 names on those two lists are either from Ethiopia or Kenya. And you can draw a line back to what Abebe Bikila did at the Olympics and other races in the 60s. So now, what happened on this day in 1969? Well, Bikila was driving in Ethiopia's capital of Addis Ababa, and he swerved to avoid a car coming from the opposite direction. He lost control of his Volkswagen Beetle, and he rolled down an embankment. He was not discovered and rescued from his car until the following morning. The accident initially left him a quadriplegic, but over time and through rehabilitation, he was able to regain the use of his arms. Bikila was invited to the 1972 Munich Games as an ambassador, and American Frank Shorter made a point of shaking his hand after he won the gold in the marathon that year. Sadly, in October 1973, Bikila died of a cerebral hemorrhage that had been a result of the car accident that he suffered on this day in 1969. Also on this day, With the recent excitement surrounding Iowa's Caitlin Clark and setting the all-time NCAA scoring record, passing Pete Maravich, we can run a through line to the first women's collegiate game on this day in 1893. The game took place at Smith College in Northampton, Massachusetts. It was not a game between two different colleges, but rather between a team of sophomores and a team of freshmen. The women played two 15-minute halves, and the sophomores won 5-4, with each made basket counting as 1 point. But if you remember back to the December 21st edition of This Dish, the game was rough then, with several players injured, and so it was in this first version of the women's game. One of the freshman women dislocated her shoulder, and her team had to play down a player the rest of the way. Now, men were not allowed in to watch this game at the all-women's college, but there was a throng of women watching from the running track above the court. The game was put together by Cinda Berenson, not quite 2 years after James Naismith introduced the game to students in Springfield, about 20 miles from Northampton. Berenson used a modified version of Naismith's rules for this game, and is fairly unique in that the men's and women's versions of the sport grew mostly in parallel to each other. This game led to a contagion-like growth of the game at women's colleges, with the first intercollegiate game played just 3 years later between Cal and Stanford. And I'll have more about that game in the April 4th edition of This Dish. And in 1934, the first Masters got underway. The tournament was the idea of the most famous golfer in the world at the time, Bobby Jones. Jones, an Atlanta native, built Augusta National along with golf course architect Alistair McKenzie. And Jones's plan for Augusta National was to build the perfect golf course to play with friends away from the constant demand from fans for his attention. Horton Smith, Jimmy Hines, and Emmett French each shot 70 on this day to share the first round lead at 2 under par. Smith continued his steady play throughout the remaining 3 rounds to beat Craig Wood by a shot. Only 4 golfers were able to shoot under par for the tournament on McKenzie's undulating greens. Smith would win the Masters again in 1936. But what about Jones? Well, he got off to a rough start on this day, shooting 76, with 36 of those strokes coming as putts. He finished 6 over for the tournament, 10 shots behind the winner. And today's non-sports fun fact. Canadian radio stations are required to play at least 35% of their content from Canadian artists. That's all for today. I'll have more tomorrow on This Day in Sports History. This has been an original Thrive Suite production.
Hey there, Sports History fans. We've got some exciting news to share with you. 6 of our podcasts from the Sports History Network have made it to the final round of voting for the prestigious Sports Podcast Awards. Here are their shows and the categories. Historically Speaking Sports and This Day in Sports History are both competing for Best Sports Talk Podcast. No Nonsense Old School Weightlifting History is in the running for Best Fitness, Health, and Well-Being Podcast. When Football Was Football is up for Best Sports Documentary Podcast. Wrestling with Heels On has entered the ring for Best Wrestling Podcast. And Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing is fighting for the title for Best Combat Sports Podcast. Now, of course, we need your help to take home the championship for each of these awesome shows. All you gotta do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/vote. Cast your vote for your favorite shows, or better yet, all 6 of them. Again, every vote counts, and we got to show the world how much sports history really matters. So thank you for your support and making Sports History Network the headquarters for sports yesteryear. But again, don't wait. You got to go vote now. That's over at sportshistorynetwork.com/vote.